Do you have learners who are beyond the basics yet still struggle with language and comprehension? Has your learner outgrown all your usual assessments? And how do you program for someone who is more complex than you were taught during your ABA supervision? We get these questions on a regular basis. So we're going to do a 3-hour workshop on this exact topic in person at ABAI. If you're going to ABAI this year in Philadelphia, come join us on Thursday, May 23rd from 4 to 7 p.m. when we discuss beyond rote responding, programming for the intermediate to advanced learner. Look for workshop number 6 in your program book or follow the link in this podcast. Sign up ahead of time so you don't miss out. You will also earn 3 ACE Learning CEUs.
Hi, I'm Shira Karpow.
And I'm Shayna Gaunt, and we're board-certified behavior analysts. At How-To ABA, we provide practical resources, community, and support to ABA professionals. In each episode of our podcast, we will be having real conversations with real people sharing real stories about ABA.
We'll share relevant strategies and actionable tips that will make us all better ABA practitioners. It's the ABA content you need that you're not going to learn in a textbook. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Today, we are talking with Payam and Shadi from Behaveu. And they reached out to us about their technology that they're developing. And we did have a chance to look through it. And it sounds super exciting. So we are really interested in hearing more. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Shana, sure.
Thank you so much for having us.
So if you could just tell us a little bit about your background. You know, I know it's a little bit interesting. Maybe one of you is an ABA, one of you is not. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your backgrounds and how you got here.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll start off. I'm Payam. So I'm the co-founder of Behaveu, the platform for ABA staff training and supervision. But my background, I'm coming in as a chief architect and senior vice president of software engineering. And in my previous role, I had up to 100 people in my reporting hierarchy, and I had to build software that hundreds of engineers were working on. So naturally, I thought a lot about training and skill development, skill mastery, which I would bounce it off of Shadi, who brought in a lot of great ideas with ABA, and I was able to adapt it well. So that's a little bit about my background, then, but I'll pass to Shadi.
Hi, my name is Shadi. In my previous life, I started as a BI, a behavior interventionist, on some home teams, and then I started to have my own private practice. I always knew that I wanted to go into health and human services because I was a pre-med at that point, but then fell in love with ABA, just made sense to me, continued on, did my second bachelor's in applied behavior analysis with a focus on autism, got my board certification with became a BCABA. And then beyond that, after about 10 years, noticing some inefficiencies, I started to think about all of the concepts that Pat was talking about and the possibilities for bringing in technology. And so at that point, I decided to go back to school, do a computer science degree, became a software developer. Sure enough, there was a lot of good parallels between the two. And then the idea of, you know, building software solutions for the autism space as well as ABA space was always there. And so there came Behaveu.
Wow. So you have two careers. I didn't realize you're also a software developer.
And so currently I'm also still doing some software consulting. So I do have a day job at the moment, unlike Pam, who's full-time focused on Behaveu.
Yeah.
I think it's so great that, you know, oftentimes we talk to people who are developing software and they're either a BCBA or a software developer and not both, or they're working with outside software developers who had no clue about ABA. So it's not quite seamless. And, you know, when we looked at your product, it looked really great because it did seem seamless. Like you guys seem to have thought about it all. So tell us about Behaveu.
Okay. Well, it's interesting you say that because it did take some time, me and Shadi bouncing it off, trying to translate it to the language that's in the corporate environment, but seeing the parallels in it. And ultimately, we decided like, hey, let's build Behaveu. And it's focused on staff training and supervision and very much for ABA practitioners. And we picked the space because there tended to be a lot of disjointed experiences in the training process today. So, for example, you might want to have an observation. You want to assess your staff member against a set of skills. How have they progressed against it? What should you be focusing on? But you might also be doing supervision and you need to track a few more details that you can then report for BACB purposes. But maybe you also need a remote session where someone uploads a video beforehand that you then give that feedback on. But what if it's now a parent that's uploading a video and you want to get feedback on that? It's all very similar, but a lot of people are using disconnected and disjointed solutions to get it done, which is more work. And even from a data security perspective, the more data you spread, the harder it is to keep it secure. So we thought, hey, we could do something about this. And well, Behavior itself was inspired from the ideas that were applied within my software organization. So it was really interesting because Shadi would give me ideas and I provided an adapted BST. And initially I was concerned, like, people would think this is weird. I'm giving them training modules of assignments. They think it's maybe university. They won't like it. But really, it became the key trait they liked about the organization. It's like, they develop us, they test us, and it worked really well. But then the funny part is, and I asked Shadi, I'm like, you know, these ideas are really good. So what's all the tech you're using within the teams? And there isn't much tech being used. So it's like, this is a little odd, right? Man. So decided to take this approach. And if I had to explain at a high level, you know, it's kind of interesting because BCBAs really understand behavior well, what data is relevant regarding shaping behavior and what matters. But computer scientists understand data structure, how to store that data, how to compute on that data. So we need to combine the two when you want to scale it to larger numbers of people and make sure you're not losing that fidelity. So putting our expertise together is kind of how this came about to finally address this and make it much easier.
That's a really big thing. You know, you talk about scaling. And, you know, when I think about staff training or I even think about parent training, I think of, okay, so when I first started out, I think I may have had five clients. Well, it's pretty easy to train five clients or five caregivers, right? Okay, great. So I'll go over, I'll make an appointment and we'll do this or we'll do that. Or here's how to read this or here's how to do this. Okay, great. No problem. But if you're working at a larger organization or if you're working remotely, it's a lot more difficult to get parent training in. And it's a lot more difficult to train staff because, you know, you may train five staff one-to-one, no problem. But then as your organization multiplies, it can sometimes grow exponentially. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've trained some staff, but then those staff are training other staff. And those staff who may not have been trained so well are training other staff. And then
it loses its integrity.
It really very does. Often.
Yeah. And I like what you said, you mentioned being like kind of surprised how much people want training. And I think that, you know, recently we were planning some PD professional development for some of the staff that I work with. And I also am sometimes surprised. I've been there for many years. And they keep asking for professional development on training and behavior management and things like that. I'm like, I feel like I keep seeing the same thing over and over again. Like, and they're like, no, people still want to hear it. Like, it sometimes takes a couple repetitions. Like, training is so, so, so important. So I'm wondering, what were some of the gaps that you're noticing in the field that this addresses?
So I can, I love that this conversation is going in this direction just because just adding on top of what you were saying regarding the challenges around delivering that training effectively. One of the key gaps from a systems perspective that was very glaring was the fact that, number one, because of the way the field is structured, the fact that we have a key few people who are fully qualified, are mandated to go through a master's, PhD degree, or even a bachelor's for a BCA, BA, and then go through their intensive practicum, so on and so forth, to receive to get their certification. They're the key people who have the required expertise and the knowledge to implement and write these programs for clients. But then the make it or break it of these programs is really essentially our technicians that we rely on, whether that technician is a sibling or a parent or an RBT, whomever, they may not have the same qualifications. And so the fidelity of the services that we're offering to our clients really highly depends on the training that we offer. But then you add to that where, you know, to do a full-time work in this field, health and human services, doesn't really pay that well. You need to have a full caseload. Whether or not you're in a clinical setting or you have your own private practice, you do need to set up a full caseload. And how do you do that without compromising on quality for your clients, right? Beyond that, you have the constraints of time and funding. Like, how much money is there in the bucket for the BCBA to continuously come in and train a new green BI, like, or an RBT? So all of those factors were obviously gaps that everybody's aware of. And, you know, there's trade-offs that people make in order to make it all work. That's fine. But then beyond that, for those of us who are ambitious enough to put in those, you know, metrics to collect that data, to try and keep track of that training as best as we can, because we know that client data tracking is kind of a priority for all of us, you know, out of everything else that we need to pay attention to, that data kind of sits there, unfortunately, and we don't end up being able to track it well, consume it well, or efficiently, especially given that the key principle of ABA, no matter how you apply it, is that data-driven decision-making, right? Being agile to how the behavior is shaping up and what needs to change in the environment to actually support that continued growth. So those were some of the gaps that I was seeing. And so wanting to make that information all be centralized, structured in a way that's easily consumable and utilized efficiently was a key factor as we were having the conversation around building behavior.
Yeah.
So many times I go into a program and, you know, they've got reams and reams of data and no one's looked at it, you know, and it's
like, it's been weeks.
Shira actually said earlier today, what was your line? Something about, we love data, but
nobody else
care. They don't, you know, whatever. It's, you know, we need to make data collection easy for the parents, but it's not just that. It's about, you know, what are we doing with these data? And if no one's looking at them, what's the point? So, you know, and oftentimes, you know, you said, you know, as our caseload grows, there's not enough time for BCBA to manage everything. And there's also often not a lot of money in the budget for a BCBA to manage absolutely everything. So to be able to have all of this information in one centralized location, especially, you know, as you're growing, or especially as you're working remotely, you may not be able to get to a specific location to look at these data. That's huge.
Yeah. And I think you raised a really good point about, you know, how the system is structured. And I think it's a lot of work for us to train. And I think there's a difference whether you like own the company and you're running an agency. And so, yeah, you're going to be invested in the training because you're responsible for everybody. But if you're a BCBA who has to oversee an RBT and they don't work for you and you're not invested in it, it's there's no motivation. Like, you think about behavioral principles, like, why am I motivated to invest my time? I may or may not be able to bill for it. And they're asking me all these questions. And what's in it for me to get them better trained? Why? Like, I don't want to work with a new RBT. They don't know what they're doing. And, you know, there's all of these, you know, conflicting principles at play when you talk about different roles that people play, and the training being so, so, so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because you got to find a way to reduce that friction point to get started so that people want to do it. And even within like software organizations, as you bring in ABA principles and convince people like, that's great. And then the effort they have to exert to do it, you know, if that's not reasonable, then they're like, oh, that sounds great, but I can't do it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, contingencies are set in such a way that it's hard to move people in a different direction, given that they already have an existing inertia, right? If you have the system of, you know, pen and paper and it's working for you and you have all these other things that you're managing at the same time, it's hard to try and want to go for a change, right? You were talking about motivating operations. It's really difficult to then get over that barrier to like now transfer all this data and like entry and all that stuff. So that was one of the key principles that we were actually trying to think about how we can overcome as we were thinking about designing and developing behavior, which was, how can we make sure we actually put in the right niceties and make the system very sophisticated in such a way that it has an impactful outcome for the people who use it. However, not make the software experience or the user learning time be such an overhead that it becomes a barrier to actually adopting that and trying to utilize it. So we did a few different things to do that, which was number one was to make sure certain key resources that everybody will need, for example, the BACB task list, is available there already, and you can import it into the platform and you can just get started right away. Just reduce the effort to onboard, increase the, you know, matching lot. And then another thing that we did was we wanted to make sure that the user experience is very smooth and super intuitive. So I'm hoping that we did achieve that. But that's something that we constantly talk about as we try to think of new features that we want to add to this platform, because the hope is that this platform becomes comprehensive enough that folks who are practitioners are able to actually utilize it for various aspects of their practice.
Would you say your platform is for, you know, like a sole practitioner with like a handful of clients, or for like large, robust agencies who provide multiple services, or like both?
That's a great question.
I would say the way we designed is for both. And in fact, you could just go ahead and sign up today and it's free up to 3 seats. So a lot of people can use it for, if they're a supervisee, they can start using it today. A supervisor or a small team, they can start using it and it will grow with you. In fact, what you're mentioning is an interesting point and is the complexity of building software and why so many pointed solutions exist rather than something that scales. Because sometimes it's easy to see your immediate problem and build a solution for it. But then your business changes and grows, and then you realize the software doesn't, and now you're stuck. Yeah. So building for something that can scale with you is often the complexity in software, but it's also in chatting with others. It's why they kind of end up not using anything, because it might hit an immediate problem, but then they don't know what to do once they have some successes, or they have to change their practice to make it work, and they don't want to do that because that's its own overhead. So people just... they decide to just use nothing in a lot of cases. So yeah, those are the complexities.
I totally know what you mean. We're actually in the process, not with our ABA practice, but with How to ABA, we've kind of like used different softwares and had that same problem where like it's not every long-term solution isn't included in this package. So we need another package. So like we're in the all in software mode right now as we're transitioning to like a better platform for ourselves. So yeah, I totally get those challenges and how they apply to, for sure, if you're using, you know, an online platform in ABA. If I was a BCBA who was using your platform, let's say, you know, mid-level or like mid-size type of business, walk me through how I might use it.
Okay.
So at this point in time, the way you would want to use it is you get into the platform, you set up an organization where you're the owner as the BCABA, and then you, BCBA. And then you can decide if you want to utilize any of the starting point assets that are available in our skills library. So in the skills library, there is a set of valuable resources that you can use, things like the BCBA task list, the RBT task list, all the different sets of skills that you need to track for your supervisees. And on top of that, that skills library is going to grow and have additional, sets of skills that could be appropriate for, say, maybe a green BI who's not going for an RBT certification, things of that nature. And then once you actually set up your organization, you would want to set up the different roles you have within your organization. I know different practices entail different roles, who's going to be supervising whom and whatnot. If you're a larger organization, you might have multiple BCBAs, and so you want to give them the right permissions to be able to see the right things. And then beyond that, you'd want to set up your staff members now with those roles where certain skill sets are associated with the role itself. So for example, if you're an RBT, I have set up a role in my organization for an RBT who is then responsible for learning and developing all the skills, including the RBT task list. You can also indicate if this person is going to be an RBT candidate or if they're currently an RBT. So how are you using that? If you wanted to just track progress on the key skills you have in mind for a particular staff, you just set up session observations. And so in those session plans, you indicate exactly what skills you're planning on observing, because we all know we want to have a pointed set of goals at any given point in time. And you can do data tracking for all of those different skills. This, you could set it up such as in such a way that you're tracking inter-observer agreement versus just coming in for an overlap and checking some things off. That data gets rolled up automatically, and then yourself and the person who is being observed both can have access to the skill set that the person's being trained on. So we wanted to make sure that the staff themselves get to see their own data and the progress that they make, because we know that data reactivity is a key factor in building that motivation and getting a person to buy in to their own development. Did I miss anything? You can also define your teams, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, we try to make it very simple. During the setup process, we ask you, what's the purpose of you wanting to use the software? And it will actually set up a starting template with the roles that you expect and a sample set of staff, so you can see the data to get you going. But fundamentally, it comes down to, what are the skills you expect? What are the roles you have that you can associate to those skills? And then you start setting up your observations, and then you look under profile. So you can start saying, this staff member, are they being successful or not? And you just continue through this process.
Is it also for people who are getting their BCBA supervision?
Yes. So that was the other thing that that's key we wanted to mention, was that you if you're using the task list and you are indicating that this person is actually going through the certification path, then the platform supports that fully, and you're able to pull all of your reports that you need in order to pass over to the board in order to move towards that certification, which is a very exciting step for folks. One thing that's actually important that we wanted to make sure we account for is, given that individual contributors like BIs who are moving towards RBT certification, or BCA BAs who are in private practice and perhaps are working under the supervision of multiple BCBAs, we wanted to make sure that the platform supports those folks being a part of multiple different organizations. Let's say you have three different BCBAs that have set up different things across all of Behaviu, and Pam is a candidate for BCABA certification who's working under all three. So the nice part about it is that Pam can actually pull all of his data from all of these different organizations easily to then be able to put it on that BACB report and then pass it over to the board.
Those are the complexities I would mention, like the data
really
structure.
Thought of everything. Like, you thought this through, clearly. As we were talking, I'm remembering I recently had to meet with a staff member to give her feedback of, like, you know, ways that she wasn't really being successful. And I had to ask the person who's directly supervising her, you know, can you send me the notes? She had to find the notes. She had to share the notes. Like, we take notes of everything, but I can imagine how easy it could have been if I could have just logged in and read every previous, you know, supervision observation meeting. Also, I find that a lot of times when I talk to staff about some feedback, they're surprised. And I always find it like, how do I help them, like, not be surprised? Because it's like you said, it's, there should be data. It should be something that they're monitoring their own progression. They should be always aware of, like, where they're successful and where they're not. And so I love the idea of the person you're supervising being able to, like, monitor their own data, because it also takes all the subjectivity out of it. It's not someone's opinion, which I often find, you know, like, it just becomes an interpersonal thing. And I think that I can imagine how helpful that is in, you know, management and training for all those reasons.
Yeah. And they know what's expected of them, right? If they're eager, they see the skills that they should be training for. So
yeah, I think that's the point that I feel like I also have a few scars of those conversations where it never really goes well, because the person seems to be generally blindsided because they believed for sure that they're doing the right work. And so those conversations are always tough. But one of the things when we were talking about or thinking about remote supervision, for example, was, or even say parents wanting to submit like a video or something for BCBA to weigh in on, we're thinking about, well, what if during my overlap with my supervisee, I can kind of take a quick video of what's happening, you know, ensuring that everybody's provided the right consents. And this goes on the platform and we can actually put timestamp comments and actually have a conversation about that, you know, interaction that happened. Because a lot of times, if you notice, like, we go in for an observation and then we have to wait for a break where we can say, like, remember when you were, like, putting the material out on the table and, you know, Jackie was actually, like, reaching for it, right? Exactly. But now I can actually scroll back and be like, here's the immediate feedback I want to give you right in this moment of the video. So that's something that actually Pam built, like, custom built the ability to be able to put in all those comments and have, like, a conversation on the video and have a back and forth with the person in mind, or the person who's actually doing the work, so that they can actually seek clarity and ask those questions. We really want to make sure that training is promoted as something that you'd want to seek out, as opposed to something that's imposed on you, or constructive feedback coming in, like, hot with a little bit of emotional baggage. So that's what we're trying to also prevent.
Yeah. And the interesting part is it applies in other places too. I mean, coming from a different perspective, like, imagine someone in a corporate environment now, someone's giving a presentation, a demo, and they're doing something that they could be improved on. It's like, well, it'd be great if you give a timestamp comment saying, like, you know, at this part of your presentation, it was kind of awkward, or, like, you were doing this thing. A lot of times people don't get that. So these ideas can actually be broadly applied. We're trying to make sure ABA is well served, but it's like, you know, this could be used in so many places, actually. Everyone's
well service. We think about, you know, as an ABA therapist or as a BCBA, you know, we talk about giving immediate feedback. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you look at our exam. So, you know, you write the exam and what we find out 6 weeks later, well, that's, I guess it's now immediate. You when I wrote it was a long time.
Me too.
But you sit there, you got to wait, and then, you get hired by an organization and you're training, you're going through the process, but you don't have immediate, typically there's no immediate feedback. So it's nice to be able to have this software to be able to say, okay, pause right there. That's it, which is great. Both positive and, things to improve on. But I can imagine that can help with staff retention as well. If staff are wanting feedback, we're giving them feedback, I can see them wanting to stay because they're growing.
I love the mission that you guys are bringing, because while I did say earlier there are competing contingencies in terms of VCBs being invested in training, I think that has to change, because the quality of ABA that our clients are going to experience will be directly related to the quality of the RBTs and BTs and paraprofessionals and the people who are directly implementing. We can be the best BCBAs creating the best programs with the best data sheets, which obviously we have that. Damn.
Obviously.
We all do. But as good as we can be, we'll only be as good as we can train. And so I think we all have to take that super seriously. And I've seen it play out so many times where we have the best BCBAs and I go in and see the programming, what's happening? Why is this not being, the quality just really gets watered down if you're not training people properly. So I think that this focus on training is so important. And I love that you're really solving that problem.
Yeah.
I think it would be one thing if, the work that we do is, or I used to do as practitioners, if it were to, one and done, wrote the program, that's about it, we're set for this person's life. That would be one thing. You would just train people one time and you're done. But then you factor in all of the data-driven changes that come in as the person's behavior shapes up, as the environment shifts, as the different contingencies suddenly come into play, the programs have to evolve. And so you're constantly training and retraining and retraining people. So if you're not able to keep up with that, the quality just kind of continues to dip down. And not only that, you also have the very natural observer drift that will happen regardless of what level training you have provided, right? So if you don't have visibility to that, especially as a BCBA who is a layer or two usually away from the work being done, your time is diluted across multiple teams, right? You kind of get to see that data once a month, twice, I don't know. You need to have some assistant, some technology enablement that will give you the superpower of almost being there all the time. And that, given that we do collect really good comprehensive data, we should leverage that. I think we are the field who should leverage that.
Totally. Yeah. Make everyone love data as much as we do. How can our listeners either learn more or try Behavio?
Yeah, well, I mean, the good part is they could go ahead on our website at www.behaviohq.com. They can sign up for free, and it's up to 3 people, so they could invite some members to also use it with. If you're receiving supervision, you can go ahead and use it essentially for your entire tracking purposes, and then it can scale with you as you are using more and more. Now, if you're, for example, a How to ABA member, they should contact us, let us know where they heard about us, and we'll be more than happy to help them, for example, set up the skills that they might have in Word documents or Excel in the software and help cater to make sure it works for them. And that way, if it works for them, great. If it doesn't, then it's fantastic feedback so that we can make it better for the field, right? Because sometimes, a key part of product development is if it doesn't work, that's also really valuable input. It's like, oh, that's what's missing. But we've tried our best and listened to a lot of different perspectives to make sure it can cater to most people. So hopefully we're eager to see how that plays out.
And our members are the best. So you're going to get the best feedback from them.
Yeah, I noticed the chat in the CEUs, everyone's so engaged. It's awesome. You have some of the best members.
Yeah, they're really nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. I love this conversation, like I said. And we just appreciate people in the field who are seemingly passionate about solving problems for professionals and our clients. And I'm excited to see what develops.
Great. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you for hosting us.
Yep. Thanks
so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining today's conversation. Wherever you get your podcast, please go and subscribe, rate, and review so others can find out about us too.
For more from How to ABA, including free resources and ABA materials, visit our blog at howtoaba.com. And make sure that you're following us on social media for more practical tips and updates.